Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to A Time for Justice. A Time for Justice is a show on the Elevated Places Network, and we discuss legal and current events in a roundtable discussion of legal minds. I am your host, Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I am an attorney. And I'd like to thank you all for listening in tonight to this episode of A Time for Justice. Our topic tonight will be anger management, conflict resolution, courts, and the community. And, you know, on A Time for Justice, we like to discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions that we see. Excuses for the racist conduct often seen, which are really just distractions from the truth, which is the path to justice and equal protection. Let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions, which are in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. Again, tonight, our topic is anger management, conflict resolution, courts, and the community. And we may be saying, well, what does this topic have to do with someone oppressing us? What does this topic have to do with this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws? Well, one of the things that my guest and I are going to talk about is this cycle of oppression, suppression, and depression. And so sometimes now we have to look at self, because the actions that we see lots of times that may manifest in these court-ordered anger management classes. We have a wonderful brother who is a magistrate judge in Alabama who's going to be joining us. So he's going to talk to us and share with us some of the what he sees with our actions, as well as we are going to talk about some of the oppressive conduct, which really does create this cycle of violence. So without further ado, I want to go ahead and, again, our topic tonight is anger management, conflict resolution, the courts and the community, and I want to go ahead and open up the mic and introduce our brother, Brother Maurice Muhammad. Brother Maurice Muhammad is a magistrate judge in Bessemer, Alabama. Brother Maurice actually is, he's the son, actually, of the late Walter Mack and Dr. Jacqueline Mack Stewart in Birmingham, Alabama. Brother Maurice actually went to Fisk University. I believe he graduated with a degree in business management. Brother Maurice also attended Miles College of Law. That's where he got his law school, Miles Law School, in 1999. Brother Maurice received the appointment as a municipal court magistrate in the city of Birmingham, where he served until 2012. He has been involved in several programs of community law and domestic violence, and in 2000 was named as domestic violence liaison to the Birmingham Police Department. In 2012, Brother Maurice was appointed as the chief magistrate for the city of Bessemer. He has been a contributing writer on topics such as the Alabama expungement law, and he now simultaneously serves as chief magistrate in the cities of Bessemer and Brighton. Brother Maurice goes on to say that as a senior at Fisk University, this is when he was introduced to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam, and he became registered in 1993 in Birmingham, Mosque number 69. Brother Maurice has held several positions, including student minister, actually, in Montgomery in 2000-2003, and student minister in Tuscaloosa from 2005 to 2010. And finally, but definitely not least, we want to say that Brother Maurice, he is married to Sister Fashan Muhammad in 95, and they have three beautiful children. So I want to go ahead and open up Brother Maurice's mic, welcome him to our show. Brother Maurice.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. How are you?
I am fine, dear sister. And you?
I am fine by Allah's grace.
Beautiful,
grace,
beautiful, beautiful.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you know,
yes,
and
ma'am.
Thank you once again for coming on the show. We really appreciate you joining us
tonight.
Oh, thank
you for the opportunity. Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the invitation and the opportunity to share with my brothers and sisters.
Yes, sir. The pleasure is ours, that is for sure. And you know, it's interesting because last week our topic was we dealt with substance abuse, and we talked about how often that's connected to, you know, some of the crimes that we see. You know, we talked about doing good in the community. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the juveniles and what we're seeing in the schools. So during the month of Ramadan, we really tried to focus on making our own communities decent and safe places to live. And so as we are now coming out of Ramadan and we're back into this, let's give information not just about the law and applying the law and how the courts, you know, do use the laws to oppress black people, which this is surely our history. But we also want to talk about how that looks when it's manifested by some of our conduct and how we can help change some of that, some solutions.
Oh, yes,
but we just want to give the data and talk about what we see. Okay? So, yes, sir. So thank you so much. Like I say, tonight, one of our issues is going to be this topic of anger management classes, management, and how that's such a prevalent buzzword in these courts. Oftentimes it's assigned to probation because of different types of crimes, and we're going to talk about that. You know, we're going to talk about some of the causes of anger. We're going to talk about solving problems and conflict resolution and, you know, critical thinking, because this is at the root of sometimes what, you know, our people's problems are, our frustration. We've got lack of jobs. You know, we're coming out of a pandemic. You know, so those are some of that's just an outline. I wanted to start the process. But I can't talk about emotions without, because anger is an emotion. So we can't talk about emotions, even from the legal perspective, without referencing study guide that we have in our nation, of Islam.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
It's entitled Rising Above Emotion, Into the Thinking of God.
Thinking of God. That's right.
Right.
That is so correct. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. And I just wanted to read this one paragraph because the study guide is so rich and so powerful, and we thank Allah mm-hmm. for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for
yes,
his
ma'am.
Guidance and wisdom with this study guide, as well as we thank Sister Ava for her, you know, teaching and instruction. But let me go ahead and read this paragraph. It says that, now this is the negative way that the minister is saying we, on the other hand, are just the opposite in our approach to a problem. So he had just got finished telling us how God, you know, he talks about how Allah God looks at problems, his precise understanding of what he wills and what stands in the way of his will. And he summons an intense dislike for the impediments. And when he says away with you, he said, this is not an emotional reaction. He said, though there is an intense feeling in it, it is the result of reasoning. So then let me just go back. So then he brings up the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan says, we, on the other hand, are just the opposite in our approach to a problem. Instead of being guided by reason, he said, our emotional reaction clouds our reason and distorts our judgment. We react to things emotionally first, and the power of passion dominates over reason instead of being called into service by means of reason. So to me, you know, that a lot of times when we're looking at, you know, when we talk about these crimes, so road rage, this is one of the articles in the Houston Chronicle, road rage ranks second when it comes to where most murders happen in Houston. This was a May 4th, 2022 article. And we know things like assault and battery and, you know, this violence sometimes that is the way we're handling problems. You know, at the root of this is the anger, you know, is the failure to reason. So, Brother Maurice, I want to go ahead and start this conversation with you. I know that you are a magistrate judge. And
yes, ma'am.
That's very interesting. One of the things that you do is you issue warrants, right?
Yes, ma'am.
In your job.
Do.
So talk to us about how does that process work? You know, honestly, before you start, I just want to say sometimes now this reminds me of what people see on some of these court cases on television, you know, where
yes,
the,
ma'am.
You know,
uh-huh.
where the people bring the facts to the judge and it's, you know,
right,
it's kind of
right.
trauma.
And he makes
so could
it,
you,
yeah,
could
yeah,
you
yes.
share with us?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
you know, as a magistrate, what my primary job is to establish what is considered probable cause. And in probable cause, it means just that. It means that we don't throw out the point of guilt or innocence. We just say that this probably happened based on the evidence that is presented, you know. So once a person is harmed or an alleged incident happened, they call the police. They tell the police what happened. From the police investigation, he makes a report. He gives that report to that particular person. That person comes to my office, and we have what we call a probable cause hearing. And in that probable cause hearing, I have the discretion to ask questions according to the rules of evidence. And the rules of evidence, hearsay is admitted in probable cause, so it does not have to be the absolute. It should be the absolute truth. But if I had a nickel for every time I was lied to, I'll be up there with Elon Musk. But in the probable cause hearing, what we're trying to do is match the facts with the elements of the crime that are set aside and set up by the state of Alabama. Every particular allegation or every particular crime has elements to it. And if this particular action matches with those elements, then it's probable that it happened. And, you know, primarily, and then from that, it spins off into as one of my coworkers said, she said, "Ms. Muhammad, you do more social working than actual legal stuff."
Okay,
and
how so?
I say, yes. You know, and I say, yes, because behind most of our incidents, there's a social need. Either, and that's why anger management is a key point, but it has to be delved into very, very deeply, because most times, and I was looking at some exit interviews today, preparing for today, and the young lady brought to my attention that 80% of the participants in the class say that they didn't need anger management. But
okay.
Yet they're in a situation where their anger has stemmed an incident, and now we're in the middle of this incident that your anger started, and now we've got to see what's happening from this particular incident. And so now, as simple as, you know, and I'm reflecting on some cases that I've dealt with, Super Bowl Sunday, the battery was out of the remote. The young man pressed the button to change the station. The station wouldn't change. He got upset, threw the remote, hit the young lady in the face, a cut right above her eye. Now she's bleeding. She calls the police. They arrest him for domestic violence. As simple as that. As simple as that.
Right.
Something jumps off just that quick. But what you don't see, and when I began to, when the young lady came down to talk to me about the situation, she was telling me about things that were happening prior to the Super Bowl. You know, like he had just lost his job. Her ex-boyfriend happened to be at a place where they both were, and he thought that she had set it up. So it's a lot of different factors that goes into the fact that this young lady was struck by this remote. But it all goes back to, how do you handle your anger? How do you manage it? How do you, everyone gets angry, but how do they manage it?
Right.
Oftentimes in our community, we handle it, and people don't realize this, and they'll almost argue with me, we handle it almost immediately, internally, and then we explode. And what I mean by that is, we'll handle it. We'll have anger, but we'll take it out on ourselves. We'll go and drink a little bit. We'll go and eat a little bit. We'll go and do things that are negative to ourselves. But after a while, we've run out of room to be negative, and then we begin to start exploding and taking that out on other people. So most of the time, the first victim of our anger is ourselves.
And when
we begin to turn on ourselves, then we have a major problem. Then we begin to change our demeanors. You said, you know, the person said, well, he's kind of changed over time. You know, it's been 2 or 3 months and he's changed the way he doesn't laugh as much. He's not as jokey as he used to be, because now he's trying to internalize a lot of this anger and it's about to explode. So, you know, I believe that a lot of the work that I do in talking to people and on that social aspect is to get them to identify. And even with our sisters, even sisters who are subjects of abuse, they're angry. But in their anger, they tend to try to become invisible with their anger. So that needs to be dealt with. So not only does the person who perpetrates violence needs to see or needs to seek help for anger management, most times the victims at that time need to seek anger management, because now they need to see, how do you handle a situation that you're placed in that is not your cause, but you perceive it as your fault.
And so now we begin to start the
process in the journey of mental issues. You know, and how we deal with one another on that level. But, you know, oftentimes as a magistrate, what you are doing, my mindset is, let us find resources. Let's find resources to help people with these situations. And what I found out, and to be truthful, what I found out, there are a lot of organizations that are out to help people but simply don't know how to get to the people. Matter of fact, we ran into an organization that was being funded by the state but didn't have clients. Because they did not know, because most people don't want to talk about their anger management. They say, that's my business. Or they say, you know, that's personal. But it's affecting not only your personal being, but it's affecting your relationships. It's affecting your jobs. It's affecting your social status. It's affecting, and ultimately it affects you financially.
But
you don't understand that aspect until you really begin to delve into it.
And that's very interesting. So, I want to broaden the, like what you're saying, because we turn, like you say, sometimes in the Black community, we turn on ourselves. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we are in these, what you call, colonies. You know, we're in places where the poverty may be higher, where the oppressive conduct by sometimes the police, like we saw the report that came out of Minnesota that where George Floyd was murdered, and it revealed that Blacks were 9.6 times more likely to be arrested than whites for low-level offenses. You know, it talks about how, you know, the racial profile and the targeting, crimes like disorderly conduct, you know, are just very frustrating and very destructive. We've talked before about the prison industrial complex in places like Mississippi, you know, where the human rights violations. So these are some of the places these people are coming from, our people are coming from. And in this week's final call, there's a wonderful Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the devastation of the Black Wall Street massacre, which really put those people in perpetual, poverty by destroying that economic base. And so some of that definitely is at the root, you know, of the anger. So I know that as lawyers, when we're coming into these courts and we're dealing with our clients and we're dealing with people that come before us, we're dealing with the effect. And so this is what we're talking about, like you say, the anger, the imagined slight, the power struggles, the fact that we can't control sometimes. This is what I saw with what some of this anger management classes are supposed to deal with, impulsive behavior. You can't handle conflicts, you know, different power struggles. I think you and I talked about that. So those things we know are the effect. However, in us trying to make our own communities decent and safe places to live, and you know, doing the job that you just so wonderfully do, this is just what we see. You know, we definitely we see this.
And what you mentioned in terms of disorderly conduct, disorderly conduct is so subjective. As a matter of fact, I just pulled up the elements here in the state of Alabama, and it can even deal with people gathering. You know, in the state of Alabama, only five or less people can gather. After that, they have to have a permit. Now, really?
I mean,
if six of us are on the corner talking and we doing our thing, and we have to have a permit or else one person has to leave, does that make sense? I mean, that's not rational in terms of humanity. But that's the law. So if you have a officer who is attempting, first of all, most of our police officers, and just being honest with you, most of our police officers that work in the Black community have no relations in the Black community. And they are fearful of Black people. And from that fear, they operate with a different edge. You know, and I'm saying that, for instance, there was an instance where a white gentleman handed a police officer a gun. after having an argument with the police officer. Now, do you think that would have happened in the black community if I just presented the gun and say, here? No, that's not going to happen. But that person was a little bit more assured because they had relations in terms of their culture and their skin color with the person that they were in debate with.
Right.
So oftentimes when our people, that's why you have catch-all offenses like disorderly conduct, so that you can maintain control and maintain a point of law. So if, in your judgment, if you are making an unreasonable, as the code states, an unreasonable noise, what is that?
Right.
What is an unreasonable noise in that particular point? If you are rebutting in a boisterous manner, what does that mean to the average black person?
Right.
You know, I remember the late, great comedian Bernie Mac, he talked about black folk and, you know, he said, you know, that's how we talk to each other, you know, and he used some very choice words of how we describe each other and da-da-da-da-da. But in that, he's saying we have a particular way that we talk to one another that may appear to be aggressive to other people. But
yeah,
in the black community, it's very acceptable.
Right. So like you say, you know, you've got the subjectivity, which in this Minnesota report, it says from 2010 to 2020, the MPD officers cited over 3,300 black individuals for disorderly conduct or obstruction.
Sure.
And,
sure,
you know, that's so they're saying 66% of all disorderly conduct and obstruction citations, you know, that were given to black people. So whatever the motive, it could be anger, you know, toward them. But I know the result, because anytime people are abused, they do sometimes react with abuse.
Sure.
And so either that abuse
is natural,
internalized, you know, we internalize it on ourselves, or, you know, against each other. So,
what has happened, if you would probably look at the Minnesota state statute on what disorderly conduct is, you can see how subjective that particular charge is. And in law enforcement, they call it a catch-all charge. So what was he doing? Was he doing this? No. Was he doing that? No. He was disorderly. That's what he was doing, because he made an unreasonable noise.
Right. But, you know, and again, we talk about oppression, we talk about the suppression, and we talk about, what's the other one? Oppression, suppression. And what we're saying is that an oppressed people will sometimes, dealing from oppression, you know, you suppress the anger because it's not reasonable for people to subjectively just give you tickets and subjectively determine that because I don't have a relationship with you and I'm over you and I can't deal with you, or perhaps I'm even motivated by, you know, the Tulsa mindset. Who knows?
Right.
But it does cause depression, and sometimes that's what we're seeing in our community, right?
You're right. You know, but this is how I keep – excuse me. This is how I keep you in check. This is how I keep you humble. This is
controlled.
How I keep you controlled. Is by placing subjecting you to a law that is in its reading very unreasonable. I mean, because as a police officer or as a general person, what is an unreasonable noise to you? What may be an unreasonable noise to me may not be an unreasonable noise to you. But because how we're raised or the culture that we're in, that maybe, you know, most of our music starts with bass drums. Most of white folks' music starts with snare drums. Different noise, different points of beat, different points of, I guess the inflection of the noise would be different, or music would be different. So that particular aspect of being able to have a point where we can come in and control you based on the law that we are setting up for you. and this is how we maneuver you. This is how we manipulate you. And then as a person in poverty, anger is something, you know, if you're at the bottom of the totem pole and everybody's weight is on you, of course you're going to be angry. Of course you're going to be, you know, as the young people say, you're feeling some type of way about that. That's natural. That's a natural reaction to feel angry about things. And then everything that you do is stemmed from a point of anger. Our social activity, we like to fight. Why do we like to fight? Because we are so angry, this is ways that we can release some of that aggression. You know, we like to, you know, we as having fun, we like to, you know, us, we like to get out there and cuss a little bit and have a little, you know, good time, and that's how we do it. But when you come in from another community, you think that we have a issue with this person because we call them MF, you know, and that's how we do.
And like you say, I mean, I think the Final Call newspaper, if we look at the poverty, the headlines, the poverty, the inflation, the jobs, you know, we see Tulsa, but more than anything, we see a big war raging. So we can definitely say that our children and our people are getting some of this violence example from not us. It's coming from, you know, the white community, the Caucasian, who sometimes is at the root of war and hatred. So, you know, talking about liking the fight, you know, you know, this is a mimic behavior sometimes, but unfortunately, and again, getting back to what we're really talking about is conflict resolution, anger management, making our own communities decent and safe places to live. And in doing that, you know, we have to look at some of the conduct that comes into, you know, these courts. And sometimes, like, you know, like you and I were saying, it's almost like the minister talked about the unraveling, because we see such an inability sometimes to do conflict resolution. You know, with this road rage issue, I saw there's a movie on there's a movie where it's called Road Rage, you know, and this white gentleman drives around and kills up all these people because of rage and running people off the highway. But, in these, In according to the Houston Chronicle, road rage is a very growing type of assaultive behavior because people are not managing their anger.
And but you know, Sister Pamela, if you would look at a person and just look at the act of, let's say, road rage. Let's use road rage for just a moment, and we just say, okay, a person is driving and they move 2 feet in front of you, and that sends you off? Or a person is driving and they move into the lane, but they don't put their blinker on, and that sends you to a point of rage that you want to kill them? That means that there are some underlying things happening even before we got in the car. We don't know what happened with the individual when they got in the car or before they got in the car. Most times when I was talking to our anger management person, the young lady that teaches the class, she said that most anger comes from the deprivation of personal control. So you can't control anything, so you're angry about anything and everything. You can't even control yourself. And you go into situations where, you know, if you're in a relationship, you're not in control of your relationship. You're not in control of your financial being. You're not in control of your social status. You're not in control of anything. And from this, when that particular person who is in control gets ready to settle you in your place, you're not satisfied with that settlement. So now you have to either lash out or internalize it and then begin to deflect on something else. She saw somebody driving and cuts you off, and you get so mad that you stop your car, get out of the safety of your vehicle, and go in your trunk and get a gun and try to shoot them, that's not the fact that that person cut you off. It's some other things going on in your life that is causing your anger, and it's causing you to be out of control. But we say it's road rage because that's just simply where the rage manifests itself. But actually, in fact, actually, it's deeper, and it's more, it's more a psychological issue of control than a physiological issue of control, because nobody's controlling your freedom to go here and there, but they are controlling the way you think. They are controlling your point of influence. They are controlling your economic means. They are controlling how you spend your money and what you spend your money on based on the manipulation of your mind. So anger management is simply being able to juggle that rationale.
Yes, sir. Beautiful. Because like the minister says in study guide, if you're not guided by reason, you know, so we're saying, okay, just being anger sometimes can lead to crime, and it can lead to destructions of property. So I kind of just wanted to give some legal background on what is a crime. You know, so crime is a, let's see, crime, I got here that when you look at criminal behavior, you have what you call intention to commit a crime or knowledge that one's actions or lack of action would cause a crime to be committed. That's what you call having the mens rea, meaning that you intend to cause the
something.
Consequences that are in violation of a state's law. You know, and then you have what you call, intent. And then you so when we're talking about anger, it's almost like does just because you're angry, that doesn't relieve your need to act in a way that you're not going to be responsible for your actions.
And that
was something that you and I talked about, because you were talking about this lack of responsibility sometimes that we see when people are like, well, I got mad at so-and-so, so I just wanted to do such-and-so. You know, and I think I'm justified.
And, you know, and we justify it. You know, we justify our actions. And I think the minister talked to us in the nation about deceptive intelligence and how we can deceive ourselves to actually believe that what we do is right, but we actually know that it's wrong. And it causes a wrong result. The brother who trained, one of the brothers who trained me as a magistrate, was a Muslim. And he would bring this to me. He said, usually, and you were talking about the definition of a crime. And he said, brother, usually crimes are activities that disturb the salam or disturbs the peace. And it causes a disruption in harmony. So if a person aggresses you and they strike you, then there's a little break in the salam. There's a little break in the harmony of being. Now, how it occurred and all of that is what we have to sit down and talk about. But he told me, he said, most times, Maurice, when people are affected by crimes, peace has been broken. And he said, just think about this. You're driving down the street and someone runs a red light and they strike your vehicle. Is your peace disturbed? Oh, yes, it is, because now your car has been up and you may even be hurt. So most laws were placed in effect or the elements were placed in effect so that we would have a peaceful life living with one another. So I know I can't strike you illegally. I know I just can't walk into your house and take things that I see that I like just because I like them. You have to have a responsibility, even in being a human being. You have to take responsibility for your actions. And, in the professional law, you know, you might not have to, you know, you might be shooting at John and hit Terry over here, but you didn't have any intent to shoot John, to Terry. You were trying to shoot John but missed and got Terry. And they call that transferred intent.
Right.
Because you intended to shoot somebody, but you just hit the wrong person. So sometimes, even in that, I transferred intent. We have transferred intent even in our personal lives, you know, and a lot of times that's what we are doing when we lash out. We don't mean to lash out at you, but you just happen to be the only one here, but I'm not strong enough to lash out at the person I'm having a difficulty with.
All right. You know, so like you say, crime being an action or an omission,
mm-hmm.
And then when you talk about intention, you know, to commit a crime is that you have knowledge that one's actions or lack of action would cause a crime to be
sure.
committed. So even if
Most
you
definitely.
Hit, you know, the wrong person, the fact that you acted in that manner, you should have been
right.
aware that anyone could have been damaged. So, you know, not
right.
gathering yourself and being rational and reasonable resulted in the harm, and you can be held,
sure.
you know, because
Most
I guess
definitely.
The reason why we're held responsible, because the reason why we're talking about this, because, of course, anger leads to crime, destruction,
mm-hmm.
You know, in civil cases, brother, that's
mm-hmm.
a whole nother type of case, because you have a criminal case, but then you have a civil case, which is
mm-hmm.
where people are let's see, civil cases are where you have disputes between individuals and organizations in which some form
right.
of either a compensation may be awarded or, you know, many times in these parental cases, you know, you can get a,
mm-hmm.
a divorce, you get a decree, you get a child custody, but it's a dispute. But at the
right.
root of a lot of these disputes, anger, you know, can cause severe just damage and destruction. In parental
sure.
custody cases, in
mm-hmm.
alienation of children from parents,
mm-hmm.
you have these broken relationships, you know, that are just at the root of why we have some breakdown of family structures a lot of times in our communities. And, you know, we see these dramas in these courts, brother Maurice, you know, oftentimes
yes,
as an attorney, and that's why I was trying to talk to you from the beginning when, you know, you got two ways that the probable cause, I think, is actually ascertained. You got police
mm-hmm.
reports that
mm-hmm.
you know, police, they, I guess, submit to you. But sometimes you actually have people either come in or people make calls.
Sure.
And then
yes,
you
ma'am.
Have to listen to the facts. And then you have to determine, well, is
right.
there a crime or is there, you know, whereas also
right.
in these courts, you know, a lot of times people are given all their delicate details and outrageous
sure.
conduct.
Yes.
This is what we did.
Right.
And
very delicate situations.
You know, yeah.
Very sensitive situations. And one of the things and one of the things that I have learned, it is difficult to tell someone that this doesn't measure up to a crime. Because oftentimes they'll say, well, I came to you and you did nothing. You didn't help me. Well, sometimes the elements that we're given are not. But it does not negate the fact that you feel that something has been done wrong. And I think that is the aspect when the person comes to me and says, well, you know, this is happening and this is happening, but I really don't have any proof of it happening. I know this man sliced my tires, but I don't have any proof. And so we can't necessarily go into a court of law with what you believe because you didn't see him do it, nor do we have a witness of him doing it, but your tires are slashed and you two just had a serious argument.
Mm.
You know, so yeah. what we're saying at this point, now what you have to do is skillfully, and I've had to learn how to do this over years, you have to still allow this person to know that what they're going through is important. And sometimes just to talk it out with them and talk it through with them is soothing enough that they can move to the next level. But sometimes they're so mad and so enraged and their anger is taken so much because they feel as though, root of it, this person has taken advantage of them. This person has manipulated them. This person has done them wrong. And so sometimes you have to begin to even deal with them just like our parents deal with us sometimes. Sometimes we have they'll listen to us and then give us the moral of the story.
Yes, sir.
And then at that point, we can begin to grow.
Yes, sir. Because sometimes on this show, A Time for Justice, when we talk about, you know, we look at courts hoping that sometimes they can be the last resort for handling of social problems, especially in our community, because we do want to have a more peaceful ability to work together and have conflict resolution. And the courts shouldn't always be the first level for, like you say, some of the imagined slight. There are better ways to handle these conflicts.
Better ways,
such as
right.
critical thinking, you know, study guide, rising above emotion, you know, separation. Sometimes, you know, avoid the incidents and go on and choose to make better decisions. So, I mean, that's how we look at things. And I want to say at this point, if anybody has a question or a comment on this topic, anger management, conflict resolution, courts in the community, anything that comes, you know, that any of our listeners would like to say, please press the number one to get into the host queue. As we speak with our brother, Maurice Muhammad, magistrate judge. Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Yes, ma'am. What I was about to say, there's a process also in the court system called dispute settlement. And in that, and I guess most places they're calling almost like mediation, if you would. But dispute settlement is simply that. You know, you have a person who you're comfortable with or not comfortable with, but is assigned to listen to your facts. You know, I've had to do it with criminal mischief situations, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend, criminal mischief. Criminal mischief is destruction of property. Okay. You sliced my tires, da-da-da-da-da. I saw you, you know, I'm working a job. I'm working 12 hours a day. You know, Mr. Muhammad, I really don't have time to come to court, but I do need to get my stuff paid. You know, the man sliced my tires. I don't have $1,200 or you know, $1,000 to replace tires on a whim just because he's upset. So what they do is they bring the two parties together and say, hey, Mr. Jones, Ms. Jackson says that you slashed her tires. She has proof that you slashed her tires. Will you be willing to just pay for the tires and settle this issue, and then we're going about our business? Now, if not, she may press criminal charges that will cause a whole different ball of wax to start moving. And then that option is offered sometimes. But I'm saying that from the standpoint of a community base where we have people in our community and organizations in our community that our community citizens are comfortable with or assured with that they can come and begin to settle differences in their community, differences in their relationships. We have to begin to do more of that, and that is a great thing to have in your community where you can come in and not bring the courts into your business, not bring the state of Alabama, the city of Bessemer, the city of Houston, and the state of Texas and everyone else into your business. You can settle it among yourselves.
Right, yeah. No, that's a great point, because when we talk about the types of cases, like, for example, some of these child-related cases where, you know, parenting skills may be needed because you don't discipline appropriately. And so being able to teach young women in the community how to handle some of the frustrations that may come, you know, to properly, you know, prepare the child so the child won't become frustrated and cry out, you know, by giving them the proper amounts of food, you know, giving them a proper amount of activity and stimulation, is better than coming and waiting until the courts, when then anger management may be at the root, because we always say the court makes a poor parent. you know, the court makes an awful parent to black children and any child, because then the child might get removed from your custody. The child might be placed with strangers. You know, that's one of my big issues. So, yes, sir. And again, if anyone has a question or a comment that they would like to ask, please press the number one to get into the host queue. You know, because, again, Brother Maurice, this conversation, I think, is very necessary, even though it's delicate, because it has a lot to do, to me, with what the minister describes as the unraveling. Because, again, the courts show the drama that we see oftentimes is just, you know, insanity. You know, there's no conflict resolution going on. There's no logic. Mm-hmm. There's no reasoning. You know, this desire to not take responsibility is seen. You know, and I do want to make it plain. There is a new phenomenon, we call it, with these anger management classes that are very popular. They're being offered. Brother Maurice, if you can explain how, if someone commits a crime, then as part of their probation, you know, these classes
part of their
are
probation. Part of it's a part of the, as they say in the language of the courts, it's a part of their rehabilitation. You know, because if you notice, all courts claim to be an arm of correction, not punishment, but correction. So when you know, when you go to prison, it is Department of Correction. So it's supposed to be correcting and rehabilitating that individual. So if a person is charged with assault and they're charged with violence, how can you properly prosecute them if you have not attempted to rehabilitate them? And the rehabilitation process is the anger management. Allow you to go through a process to see why you handle your anger like this, or why are you so angry about this particular thing? And then you begin to find other underlying issues that created the stream of anger that you are suffering. And you will be surprised. I was surprised that it was 85%, but the young lady said it's higher than that. And she said, Mr. Muhammad, higher than, it's 85, it was 85% of the people who did not think that they needed anger management. And she said, actually, it's probably higher than that. And she says that you will be surprised, Mr. Muhammad, how many people are on the verge of suicide, but they don't realize that they need anger management.
Wow.
She said they're on the verge of it.
Wow. Yeah. And for me, I mean, that's kind of like the study guides for me and helping, you know, with attitude. There's a wonderful article by Brother Jabril in this week's Final Call, and it is actually talking about attitude. And so lessons on self-development and proper attitudes, that's what it's called. So I can really see that with anger management, especially if it's being done by the proper people with the proper material that can really help black people, you know, because we've got our own perspectives and experiences, like we talked about the racism and the oppression that's on top of all of this. So we got to make sure we're dealing with root causes. But like you say, I saw a study, and it said something about 75% of those receiving some of these courses, they say, actually improved. And some of the outcomes, they talk about empathy is improved, the ability to empathize with others, you know, improving judgment, you know, managing impulsive behavior, you know, developing boundaries, I think is so important, you know. Understanding your triggers, remaining calm and, under stressful situations. So,
You know, all of that is in the makeup of the rehabilitation. You don't know that you're off, as my friends would say, you don't know that you're off the chain until you are off the chain. Then you realize it, but then sometimes it's too late because you don't know in that moment of passionate rage that you may suffer, you don't know what damage you may be that you may do, and how irreversible some of that damage is. And most of the damage that we do that is irreversible is not what we do, but what we say. So we're talking to an individual, and we'll say some things that in our regular mind we don't necessarily deal with or even mean, but in our rage and our desire to be placed back into control, we'll say things that will hurt people to place ourselves back into a point of control. And then once we say it, we can't unsay it. Once we say it, we can't it cannot be undone. And you mean this thing, you know, and that person will never see you the same. You damage the relationship based on not being able to control that point of rage that you've been given.
And another piece I wanted to interject from the final call, there's another article under the How to Eat to Live by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and it talks about poisonous food and water. And so when we talk about some of the causes of this anger, you know, I think for us, anger management classes that actually talk about what you're putting in your system, that, you know, of course we know, as we spoke last week about alcohol and substance abuses and how those things affect reasoning ability, depriving you of reasoning. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says simply, if what we eat and drink keeps us alive, then we must be careful of what we eat and drink, because that same, the same that keeps us alive can bring death to our life, as there are so many of us who do not know the kind of food and drink that we should eat and drink for long life. So,
yes, ma'am.
You know, it's interesting because this bringing of death, you know, we talk about the high blood pressure. We talk about, you know, the diabetes or different issues like that from the swine. But what about some of the inability to make reasonable decisions and responses, which are at the root, you know, of some of this anger management?
Yes, ma'am.
That we're seeing, yeah.
And this is, I would even like to add, you know, as we talked about the of what we ingest, even the music and the television, the media that we feed ourselves. You know, I remember I was talking to a young man, and he was dealing with some domestic violence issues, and I said, well, what was going on? He said, man, you know, I was chilling, and I was just thinking. And then I said, man, I need some music. And so he went and got a tape, and he said, whoop that trick. So he said, yeah, that's what I do. And so now his thought has shifted from a firm affirmation here. Now this is a firm affirmation that this is how I'm going to handle this matter. I'm going to go in there and whoop her. And then he went in the room and jumped on the girl, went to jail. The girl's brother bonded him out. And apparently he had the same tape that he had. And on there, he ended up whooping him like he whooped his sister. So it was kind of like, but he still had to deal with the city. But
he had to deal with
that situation.
What?
He still had to deal with the city and the prosecution. But at the same time, he did not meet what he wanted to meet on that end. So I guess a lot of what we even ingest, you know, even what we think is and what social media is putting out there as a norm, what the social media is putting out there as a trend, and what we're attempting to live and how we are attempting to redefine culture. You know, and those things also feed into the digestive system of us as beings and humans, as people, especially
that's
black
right.
people. You
no,
know,
you're
because you know,
right.
you know, and so we have to be very careful, even with that, how we begin to calm situations. You know, a lot of times, when I'm dealing with people, it's like I tell people all the time: people don't come to my office just to say hello. it's a problem going on. Either they're trying to get somebody out of jail or they're trying to put somebody in jail. So there's a problem all the time. So it's, when I see a person, it's like, okay, what we got? Let's go. Let's get it. You know, what do we have to deal with? So as we begin to deal, sometimes I use the agency of music. You know, I would just come in, young lady, she's crying. She's trying to tell me what happened, and she's crying, and she's emotional, and da-da-da-da-da, and so on and so forth. And I may put a song on, and she'll stop and listen to the song for a minute. And it may be something, a Babyface song, or somebody that's saying something with some soothing melody or something. And
give
she comes
hope.
Around at, yeah. And so basically then I can get information from her. You know, but if she's mad and she's caught up, I don't even know what happened. And she can't tell me what happened. So sometimes I'll even break the ice with a little joke or a point of compliment that will get the person a little less tense so that they can give me the information that is needed that I can do what I need to do with it. So sometimes you have to be at a point where you can deal with the people and not ingest their problem. Yes, you sympathize with a lot of their situations, but you cannot ingest all of that stress. Or you would be a zombie. You would literally be out of it. You know, so you have to be able to place it.
Yes, sir. Because like you talked earlier, you talked about some of the, you know, imagine slights than they said under anger management behavior. And so to me, when some of our fighting that occurs, you know, in anybody's community, but I think you said, you know, it's kind of like that. You think somebody is going to mad at you, but they really not, or you think that they want your boyfriend, but they really don't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you said earlier that maybe there are cases where girls are fighting over men, men are fighting over girls,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
What types? Yeah. Is that a
huge problem? Yeah, I mean, that's a daily operation. Yes, and it all stems in a point of insecurity. You think you're going to suffer a loss of this person based on the presence of this person, and so you're going to lose the relationship. And you know, we've worked hard over these 3 years to develop this relationship, and here comes this person who just comes off the street, and you know, they look nice in a pair of jeans or a dress or a muscle shirt or whatever they're doing, and now everything, I'm going to lose something. So in our efforts to regain what we think we may have lost, we begin to act irrational. Or what are you going to do? I'm going to jump on the person. But that does not necessarily mean that that person's going to feel about you like you feel about them, just because you attack the person that may be the interference. That's not going to change your relationship, you know. So you have to be able to deal with that point of loss. You know, a lot of times when I listen to the young ladies and young men when they're talking about the other sex and, you know, the brothers and sisters, and they're losing brother and sister for us, you know, so on and so forth. What I'm hearing is I don't want to be without. I don't want to be in relationship poverty. I don't want to be relationship poor. I already don't have a whole lot of money, but now I don't want to be relationship poor. So I'm going to try to do what I can to maintain at least a little portion of relationship that I think I got.
Yes, sir.
And like my grandmother would tell you, if he can take her, she was never yours.
Right, right. But again,
you know,
the conduct is that you're not justified in what you're doing, and then you're not accountable for the actions of why, you know, you made criminal, you know, action, you know, hurting someone or letting your anger be the reasoning. I'm going to go ahead and take a call.
Sure.
I don't have my screener tonight, so I'm going to go ahead and open up this call. We have last digits are 682. let's see, caller 682. Yes, caller.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
I was so mad a few minutes ago when I called in and the phone kept making a peculiar sound. And so I called on Allah and I called right back and I pushed one. And so I don't know what was going on. But I guess I needed my anger management classes.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. I will say this to the judge. I have had assertiveness classes. I have had domestic violence classes because I did suffer 10 full years of domestic violence in a life-threatening situation. And I thank Allah for the Cleveland police who assisted me. In those days, you had to go to a police station, and they would take you to a shelter. And the brother I was involved with, his family was in the police force. So when I would leave the shelter, guess who would show up at the grocery store? Who would show up at the park or the movie? So I thank Allah for Islam, and I thank Allah that Allah blessed me to separate from this individual over 30 years ago. As-salamu alaykum.
Praise be to Allah. Praise be to Allah.
Yes, ma'am, Sister Ula. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Ma'am. And in those domestic violence classes, so you kind of learn some of the things that you need to know. You know, you get placed in the mind of a person that is going through this that type of ordeal. And when I talk to people about domestic violence in general, I say you usually have three victims. The assailant is actually a victim. And the person who is the actual victim or the abused is a victim. And then you have a third victim who is the onlooker. And that's usually one of the children. And so what I'm saying with that, even in that, when you are domestic violence assailant, there are some things going on in your mind that are not right and that are, you're not working on the right side of sanity at a lot of times. And then as a victim, you need to know the triggers and know the points of when that person is going through how you should react. Because a lot of times people attend to, in domestic violence situations, they want to fight fire with fire rather than fight fire with water, you know. Yeah. And what I mean by that, they want to raise up as the person is raising up. And what you don't understand about that person raising up, they can't control their rise. So you don't know what's going to happen at the top of the raise up. You don't know what's going to happen at the top here. All you know is you're trying to keep your ego together and say, you're not going to talk to me like this, rather than move on and protect yourself. You want to try to fight with them verbally and verbally joust with them, and they're not at any point of rationale to even understand what you're saying. So what you're saying really almost goes for naught for their rise, because they have one thing on their mind, and that is controlling you. So whatever, by whatever means it takes to control you, that's what they would do.
Wow. Yeah. So that, thank you so much again, Sister Ula, for that and contribution. And as you say, have so much information. I think, you know, the teachings serve as a root, the different programs. We have professionals in the nation, without the nation, that can teach people how to handle conflict, you know, counseling, mental health issues. You know, and like Brother Ishmael said on Sunday, you know, no man should strike a woman. And I think it even is also worth saying that women, of course, should not men as well. You know, we need to be able to handle our anger. So, again, that's why I always say study group. You know, of course, like you say, when there's serious incidents, this is where professionals who handle this type of information are best, you know, to advise. But, so we're kind of coming down to the last, but I'm glad that we brought out this problem because we want to talk about problem-solving skills, which I think you kind of started with your conversation with Sister Ula. You know, we talk about separation because as long as we are, as the final call talks about, you know, we're in a society where hatred and anger and murder and violence, you know, are just the order of the day. So, you know, sometimes this is what we react to. You know, this is what we imitate. You know, we turn in on ourselves. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. Talking about conflict resolution, I think it was very important. If anybody has a comment or a question, please press the number one to get in the host queue. But I think one of the things about conflict resolution and this is that we're resolving conflicts in our own mind as well. When you're talking about anger management, this is that work that you have to work on in your dome as to not being so impulsive and not imagining that people are angry with you that really aren't. And you know, you shared with me earlier some of the power struggles that we're even seeing in just all over, you know, I think sometimes with religious sometimes with, you know, civil, because we got the criminal cases that, you know, you're violating laws, you're trying to harm people. But these civil disputes where, you know, people are breach of contracts, you know, how do you handle that? You know, can you sit down and deal with it? Yeah, violating rules. So what are we seeing with some of the destruction or damage that's coming from that we need to really get a handle on?
Well, one of the biggest things that I see, Sister, is the fact that I believe, this is just my personal belief, that every organization, every whether it be a church organization, civic organization, or whatever, any type of organization within the Black community needs to have an arm of dispute settlement or some type of outreach, that it becomes very prevalent in our community to be able to talk to someone and talk problems out with people rather than allowing them to fester and, as you say, lead to destruction of property, leads to, you know, I'm going to bust your windows out, but that ain't going to make me come back to you. But I now have a windshield. So those type of situations, I think, need to be enhanced in our community. We need to put emphasis on solving and resolving disputes in our community. You know, we were just kind of jokingly speaking about the problems with the churches that I was dealing with the pastors, but there was assigned a person to mediate their differences. So that when they came to the court, the only thing they did is say, okay, hold on one second. We're going to assign this person to you to resolve your issue. And then what we found out in the issue, we found out that the church wasn't properly set up. It wasn't incorporated properly. Have a good one, sir.
Okay.
The structure was not set up for success. So now you end up setting it up correctly, and now the church won't have this problem anymore. That particular one won't have that problem anymore. Just like in our community. You know, when you see situations going on, if we are assigned to a person or assigned to something, then we can help them get their business in order so that they can properly function. So a lot of times you are operating out of improper function. You know, we got the eyes trying to hear and the ears trying to smell. But they're not, they're still ears and eyes, but they're just doing the wrong thing. So what we have to begin to do is set our community, if we want to set it up in peace, we got to set it up with proper structure. Not saying that nobody, you know, we're not picking the preacher. We're not doing this. We're just going to set it up so that you can, because we're not going to be there with you every Sunday. That church had to choose their preacher after the big fight. Now, they fought like cats and dogs, and they still did not resolve the issue. You still had to go into a mediation and have the issue dealt with. But for some reason, we think if we win the fight, we win the argument.
Mm-hmm.
And that's most times not the case.
Yeah, that is a great point you're making about structure and business agreements and contracts. As we talk, we're taught in the Quran how important it is to have
mm-hmm.
agreements, you know,
sure.
proper governance, because as we are going into making our own communities decent and safe places to live and building our own, we have to avoid conflict by having the proper paperwork. You know, the, like you say,
mm-hmm.
proper understanding so as to
mm-hmm.
avoid misunderstanding. You know,
right.
that's
right.
one of the things that we as lawyers, you know, can really bring to the table a lot of times is everybody getting their expectations on the table, you know, and we kind of cover the bases on what you think is going to happen, worst case
mm-hmm.
scenarios, so then we can actually move smoothly through some of these transactions. And, you know, as we see sometimes with entertainment, you know, right when we're ready to make money or when we're ready to succeed because we didn't have our paperwork in order, you know, you leave too much room for emotional breakdown
right.
because we don't have everything laid out. So I think that's a really important
sure.
topic that you raised. And
yes, ma'am.
I think as well, this issue, and I wanted to take it in a different direction
mm-hmm.
because, again, we can talk about critical thinking, constructive reasoning as ways to solve and problems. We talk about how separation is the key, you know, for just avoiding negative situations, which, you know, for us in the Black community, we look at the whole negative situation of oppression and, you know, our
mm-hmm.
inability to get along with this enemy in peace. You know, we talk about how as lawyers, you know, sometimes not being emotionally tied to positions helps us to be good arbiters. You know, we have to look at both sides. You know, we have to actually look at what, you know, question so we can get to the root cause of things in resolving conflicts. You know, so I think that's really important. And then I also wanted to end, you know, the show with a conversation you and I were having about, I think it ties to the children and the excellence
mm-hmm.
that our children have in them. And how
mm-hmm.
sometimes because they don't have outlets to get
mm-hmm.
their creativity going, you know, like you say, they, you know, boys like to do things that are maybe aggressive. They may like to do sports. They may like to do, you know, mental thinking things out. You know, girls as well, you know, those sisters and brothers who do those STEM, I love their podcast because it shows the brilliance of our youth. You know, but in the state of Alabama, I know you all have a lot
mm-hmm.
of colleges, HBCUs you have. So give us just a little background on that as we're closing this out, because we, you know, excellence in forming solutions on how our children can be trained and qualified and taught.
Sure.
How to rise above emotions is so important, having those skills.
Well, yes, ma'am. I think one of the key things to success in terms of our young people is exposure and having them exposed, because what is happening, our enemy is exposing our young people to what they want them to see, and it's not in their best interest. So we are responsible for showing our young people what we want them to see that is in their best interest. And just understanding the fact that, you know, when you talk about your HBCUs in Alabama, we have HBCUs, of course, Alabama State, Alabama A&M, and then we have Stillman College, we have Oakwood College for the Seventh-day Adventist, and we have a plethora of educational as Talladega College. As you said, I went to Fisk University in Nashville. But all of these colleges and institutions, they were formed with a purpose of exposure. Alabama State was first called Alabama's Black Teachers College because they wanted to expose black people to teach other black people rather than in their own schools. Alabama A&M, on the other hand, was the normal school of Alabama, Normal Institute, and it was teaching farm skills. And, of course, Tuskegee kind of merged both of those together, but they stuck with, you know, they stuck with the hands-on and the STEM-based pieces more so than the liberal arts pieces, and that was Talladega. So what we have to do is find where our young people are and then find the vehicle to expose them to that. You know, we have plenty of information. We have, you know, I'm quite sure in Texas, you got Texas Southern, you got Prairie View, you got, no, Bishop is closed now, but you got a few black colleges that are scattered and sprinkled all through. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a black college, but it has to be a black cultural experience so that those young people can see themselves on the other side of success, not just from the bottom. We got to have a different view. You know, people ask me all the time, Ms. Muhammad, can you set up a scared straight type program? Yeah, I could set one up. It would take but a second. But before I do that, have you taken your children to a boardroom? Have you taken your children to a meeting, a board meeting? So I wanted to expose them not just to criminality and what will happen if you don't do what you're supposed to do, but this is what I want to expose them to, also to what you should do, and this is what happens when you do what you're supposed to do. Now you can make decisions about million-dollar decision, billion-dollar decisions, and you are able to see that. You know, if you're an adult and the first time you've been to a board meeting, then you're behind the curve. So now as a people, we have to begin to enhance what we're teaching our children and promote what we want them to be or what we have in our mind. Allah gives us our children as a reward to us, but we really have a job to do. They're really not ours. They're just in our care. They're his children, but they're in our care. So we have to be good stewards of what Allah has given us. So with that, we have to expose our young people to greater things rather than wanting to. It's easy to expose them to the negative. It's easy to expose them to the lower mind. But now let us begin to explore the higher mind and the higher doings of things, the higher order of things rather than the lower mind.
Yes, sir. And like we've tried to convey tonight, you know, there are problems that we run into, but you better be able to handle problems, you know, out of chaos. You want to have order. So you do have to struggle, and struggling a lot of times is done, like you say, with the exposure. We've got Brother Louis Ali who talks about training and skilled tradesmen and how important that is. And I think it comes down to critical thinking skills. That's a big thing, because critical thinking is the process to rationally analyze and attempt to solve problems accurately and efficiently, not, you know, just using anger. Like you say, business leaders use critical thinking to solve day-to-day problems. It's, you know, it's a skill, it's a mental process, and it's based on what they call acquired knowledge, where you have to analyze, examine, and scrutinize. I mean, when we talk about the study guide, we talk about self-correction and we, you know, looking at self. So, you know, just in closing, a critical thinker has characteristics such as being open-minded, logical. You can consider a wide range of perspectives. You can accept new findings, pieces of evidence, explanation. You want to be willing to reassess information and open to reasonable possibilities, not making hasty judgments. And again, I think that's important when we look at anger management, because a lot of times that's about haste. That's about, like the minister said, failure to use reason. You know, and
because you're in
when
the moment.
You look at being, because you're being motivated by emotion, is what the minister said. He said, on the other hand, we, on the other hand, are just the opposite in our approach to problems. Instead of being guided by reason, our emotional reaction clouds our reasoning and distorts our judgment. And so reacting to things emotionally first, and the power of passion dominates over reason instead of being called into service by means of reason. So, you know, that's what we wanted to get across tonight. We wanted to talk about what we see in the courts, because there's a lot of anger-induced crime, a lot of impulsivity.
Yes.
And Brother Maurice, I just want to thank you so much for sharing.
Thank
and,
you once
we're
again,
down
ma'am.
To a minute. You want to give a closing remark on that? Yes,
dear
sir.
Sister, the only thing I want to really say is before we get off the airways that they will have a celebration for Minister Farrakhan's 89th birth anniversary. And it is circulating online where you can call in and listen to that celebration on tomorrow. Tomorrow is his 89th birthday, and we are thankful to Allah for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
And when you say call in, you're saying call in, it's circulating. Can just give me a little
yes,
bit
ma'am.
More?
Yes, ma'am. They have a phone celebration that they're going to hook up at, let me see what time it starts. I just got it on my, okay, it is 4:30 a.m. Central Time. And it says join us in a national prayer on May 11th. That's tomorrow. And it has all of the numbers listed. And it has a happy 89th birth anniversary to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Oh, that's beautiful. And is that coming from the national?
Yes, ma'am. And I'm going to share it with you on
Allah.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's beautiful because, again, what a beautiful way to end our show, because tomorrow, what is this, May 11th, is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's birth, is what Brother Maurice so beautifully brought to our remembrance. And so, you know, as always, we're so thankful to Allah for his guidance. And,
praise be to
you
Allah.
Know, thank you so much for bringing that to our attention, Brother Maurice.
Oh,
and,
yes, ma'am.
Well, I would like to thank everyone for listening to the Elevated Places Network presents A Time for Justice. To hear previous shows, you can log on to the Elevated Places. We invite you to tune in. I would like to thank the Elevated Places Network team. I would like to thank Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad and encourage everyone to listen to her show, Ask Dr. Ava, that comes on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. I would like to thank my producer, Sister Samaya Muhammad. I would like to thank Sister Donna Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad. And also, I would once again like to thank Brother Maurice Muhammad, who is the magistrate judge in Alabama. I would like to also thank everyone who tuned in and who listens to our show. Thank you so very much for giving us your attention and your support. And again, next Tuesday, I will talk to you all then with another episode of A Time for Justice. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.